This is Ozarks at Large. Steve Yates does not write about the same thing often, if ever. Steve, a fiction writer with an MFA from the University of Arkansas, is the author of the novel Morkin's Quarry, a Civil War-era novel set in southwest Missouri. For his latest book, a collection of short stories called Some Kinds of Love, he goes back to the Missouri Ozarks, but to other places as well. And to different worlds, really, including a slow-pitch softball player who may or may not see the end of the world coming. But also a story about a father trying to figure out his son's possible future left in the hands of his ex-wife. Steve Yates now lives in Mississippi, where he is assistant director and marketing director at the University Press of Mississippi. And he's with me on the phone now. Steve Yates, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Hey, it's great to be back, Kyle.
Let me go to my first concept that you don't write about the same thing. That's not quite true, because all of these stories do deal with human relationships. But the dozen stories vary wildly in tone and sort of approach. I would think that for you, a writer, that would be great fun.
I think it is, but I think it's also a necessity of who I am and what I do every day. I've got this 50-hour-a-week day job at a university press that's really rewarding and fulfilling, but it consumes a great deal of thought and energy. And so when I write anything that I can think through beginning, middle, and end, I tend to get very obsessed for a very short period of time. And then when I'm finished with it, the next thing that would obsess me that intensely, why, who knows what it'll be? It could be, you know, grasshoppers in Idaho. I don't know. And so that causes me to write things that don't seem like each other.
Well, when do these ideas come up? For instance, the final story in the book, which is about the softball player I mentioned in the introduction. And it's Myla, is that how you would pronounce
mm-hmm,
it?
Yeah.
Myla joins the game. And it's about this character who works as a furniture restorer who can also kind of see into the future. Where does the germination for a story like that come from?
Well, let's not tell anybody who has employed me or currently does, but sometimes these ideas come up at work, and it's not a productive situation. In that that idea came at the News Leader in Springfield, Missouri. So it's a very, very old story in its genesis. In that I was working with this wonderful guy named Larry S. Hazelrigg, and he was a sports writer, but he was kind of one of the last really great journalists, one of those people whose passion was getting it right, even though what you were writing about was people playing slow-pitch softball. And he had told me this story about a pal. He was from Kansas and went to a lot more rodeos than we do in the Ozarks. And he had a pal who could sit there and see a bull rider mount up, and he would then say 10.45 seconds, and the bull rider would go out, and sure enough, 10.45 seconds, he was off the bull. Without fail, he would do this. And I thought, well, you know, there's a very useless skill for the most part. And I wonder what it's like if someone really can see into the future, but only barely into the future, give them maybe 60 minutes. And I kept thinking about this and thinking about this. And once you get a kernel like that going, it just accretes like a crystal in a cave. And it's just there and there and there. And until you get that crystal out, it's almost hard to concentrate on the things you're supposed to be concentrating on in your job.
When did you, along this process for this story, get the idea that what might be seen might be Armageddon?
Oh, in the Ozarks, I would think that's ingrained in any kid who ever had to watch early morning TV. I was never a late sleeper, and I would wake up and turn on the television waiting for Bugs Bunny to come on. And what was on instead of Bugs Bunny were evangelical preachers from places like Koshkonong, Missouri, which, I mean, if that's not exotic enough, I don't know what more you need. But to a person, these early morning preachers were really concerned with the last chapter of the Bible and not many of the other Gospels at all. You would hardly ever hear them go to Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. It was almost always Revelations and just really enthralling stuff about dragons and people getting eaten up by plagues and locusts. And I may have just equated it with cartoons, but it became ingrained in me so much that it's a kind of apocalyptic thinking that I was exposed to as a little kid watching TV. And why not? Why wouldn't the softball game also be included in the apocalypse?
You just mentioned getting up to watch Bugs Bunny. It's funny because you write just briefly about a child watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon in, I think it's the story New Father.
Yeah, he's watching those pounding machines. Bugs Bunny had, there was such an interesting way in which, I guess, jazz music and classical music that was used in the background of those cartoons was so wonderfully met with new modern terrors. As you look back on those cartoons, there are very funny things happening, but there are also these kind of terrifying compressions of modern life. And there's one where I don't remember what else is going on in the cartoon, but there's a pile driver, and I think either Bugs Bunny or Yosemite Sam is chasing him through this pile driver back and forth. And of course, we all know what's going to happen. Yosemite Sam is going to get smashed, and he's going to come out looking like a coin. But I've just never forgotten that one Bugs Bunny episode. That's just a great scene with the music behind it and the pounding and the pounding and the pounding. And I thought, you know, that would resonate with a father who's exhausted and he's divorced and he's trying to figure out, you know, what am I going to be? How am I going to love this kiddo when all I get is two weekends every month? And that just seemed like the appropriate scene for them both to be watching.
It's funny because in the two stories we've talked about so far, Myla Joins the Game and New Father. In Myla Joins the Game, there's sort of a Donald Harrington-esque feel. Mm. It's sort of this otherworldly, Myla can see the future and he might be seeing something. And he, you know, so there's this sort of otherworldly feel. Not so in New Father, which is heartbreakingly contemporary and very much about this weekend that a father and a young boy spend together. They're completely different.
Yeah, and you know, I had trouble publishing the book because many people would comment on that, and I always wondered, well, you know, what in the world do you want in a collection of short stories? I would get a note back, which, you know, thank goodness I was getting notes back rather than just total cold-faced rejection. But they would say, there's just so much variety in these. They're so very different. They're so, each one is almost a variant. Or it's just not, and I thought, well, did you want them all to be the same? and I was glad that, I was glad that that as a contest book, I mean, most first-time writers, or when they come to publish that collection of short stories, unless they've tagged it to a novel and their agent has sold it that way, they're usually sending it to these contests. And it was a finalist at the Iowa Prize, it was a finalist at the Flannery O'Connor Prize, and a finalist at Black Lawrence. So I knew I had the right stories in there. I just had to find someone who wasn't going to make it a place horse, was going to say, okay, well, this one's really the winner.
Your characters have wonderful names, especially when you're writing in the past. They did in Morcan's Quarry, your novel, and in the story Starfall, which opens the collection Some Kinds of Love. Mm. There are people named Boom and Nimrod and, who's the male carrier? Nahum?
Oh, Nahum.
Nahum.
Well, of course, some of those come just from the Bible. And,
right.
And very often, you know, growing up in the Ozarks, you'd meet people named Micah, and you'd meet Nahum, you'd meet, you know, some of the minor prophets. And it's always fun to put a spin on that, too, and think, okay, well, sometimes parents will give names to their children and then not really think about it. I mean, naming a child Holofernes or something like that. Oops. But Pilot is one. I thought, well, you know, Pilot's a really beautiful name, and maybe someone who was churchy but somewhat thoughtless would say, you know, I'm going to name my boy Pilot. He's in the Bible. And so Pilot gets his name. That was the story. Starfall is the story that always seemed, I just couldn't stop thinking about Donald Harrington while I was writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the story that I did send to him when it was published, to say, Don, I just couldn't stop thinking of you. I wrote it, and I'm so glad I did, because, you know, he gave me some real positive and wonderful advice about it, and he loved it.
Boy, it does, you don't get a better compliment than that as a writer.
I know, especially as a writer in the Ozarks. I mean, he's more than a touchstone. I mean, he's like, you know, he's Mount Magazine, you know.
Is writing a 19th century story any different for you than writing a contemporary set story?
Not really.
Okay.
No. I think the one thing that people make really big mistakes about, or that at least turns me off when I'm reading historical fiction, or just fiction about rural people, is that people way back in the past had incredible brain capacity. You know, if you were to talk to a mechanic in a steam shop somewhere, they would have all kinds of stuff in their brain to think about, beautiful stuff, lyrical stuff, crazy stuff, complicated stuff. But people will write about people in the past, laborers in the past, or just workers and lovers or whatever, and they tend to try to make them simpletons, rubes, kind of like Thomas Hardy's rustics in Far From the Madding Crowd. Well, Hardy could write about those people because they were relatively contemporary to him. That's fine if he saw that people who were sheep herders were not very bright. But my take on the world is that most people I meet are a lot smarter than I am, and they've got a lot of really cool stuff rattling around in their head, and that's what I want to get at.
The title of the book, Some Kinds of Love. It's a collection of short stories published by the University of Massachusetts Press. I know there are copies at Nightbird Books, but you can also find copies elsewhere, depending where you are on the web as well. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Thank you, Kyle.
Steve Yates' collection, Some Kinds of Love, won the 2012 Juniper Prize for Fiction from the University of Massachusetts. Steve earned his MFA at the University of Arkansas, now lives in Mississippi, where he is assistant director and marketing director at the University Press of Mississippi.